I was thinking about loneliness right now. And the main thing is with myself, I find that I've always, not always, for a long time, and by a long time, I mean as far as I can remember, I felt a constant level of like melancholy and loneliness that I find just like transcends my day-to-day life, my day-to-day experiences. Like it's just a constant that I find is kindled by, you know, like my proclivity to focus on negative things, negative aspects, that really just like feeds into a positive feedback loop, but obviously like in the negative sense. You know, it's rumination. But like, and I'm doing it right now. That's the funny thing, you know, like this whole me doing my one person podcast, which isn't, I don't even know if I can call it a podcast, but I mean, you're listening to it. So the fact that it's just me ranting or raving or just thinking out loud for however long the episode goes on for is literally a testament to my level of rumination, you know? And, rumination in most, I find that rumination without purpose and even with a purpose that comes from just like a place of desire and not necessity can lead me to feeling pretty fucking shitty and you know, like making poor decisions later down the line, because these points of rumination aren't just happening and then they're done once I'm done talking or thinking. No, those ideas and opinions that I formed during those periods of rumination still exist. They just blend into my reality. They become part of my reality, part of my perception of reality, more specifically. And reminds me of when I was on shrooms, or it was acid, ages ago. And I'd always get back to this point where I was like, man, I am everyone, and everyone is me, you know, like the classic. And I find the thing that really convinced me of that opinion, that made me so fucking like, whoa, about it, is the fact that my experience of reality is based off of opinions and ideas and thoughts. And, you know, these periods of rumination when I'm by myself aren't as healthy, or even you could just say, I don't want to say they're entirely unhealthy, but they're not, there's a higher proclivity for toxicity, just like poisoning, souring of my own mind through rumination. But the process of rumination is very, very similar to having a real conversation with someone, like a straight up conversation, just like a philosopher's conversation almost, you know, like those real talks that everyone really likes, everyone loves them. And so like, it's the same to me in the moment when I'm having these deep ruminative thoughts. Say deep, not in the sense that like, oh, this is so deep. I mean, in the sense of like, I'm swimming and I'm not in shallow water right now. This is fucking, I'm in this shit. It's a very similar feeling to that of having a real talk with someone, which sounds sad out loud, but that goes back to like that loneliness, you know? I find maybe the rumination that I experience on my own gives me a dopamine and serotonin release for multiple reasons, among other like feel good chemicals, like fucking receptor or a fucking, what's it called? As a, the one that makes you focus, it starts with an A. Anyway, irrelevant. Like those receptors get hit because, or get, you know, get a boost because, a multitude of reasons, and one of those reasons that I'm thinking of right now is the same experience, because it's similar to the experience of having a conversation with someone that really, like, that you can grow from, or that you're learning during, you know, or teaching even. It doesn't have to be just like growing and learning, it's also just like teaching, being like just teaching someone else something. And yeah, that goes back to being lonely, you know. And I don't know, I find that a lot of people have some really great thoughts and opinions and ideas, and it's because they've spent a lot of time ruminating, stewing on those ideas, you know, and stewing on those ideas by themselves and leading themselves down whatever rabbit holes they choose that they find interesting. And regardless of the nature of their opinions, it fascinates me, because it's just such a, it's obvious that they have gone either down a wealth of information, whether it's good or bad, they've still gone through it, and they've applied some form of critical thinking to, during that experience, and then they've come to me and they talk to me about, you know, they share about their opinions and ideas on the world that are literally the product of those individual ruminations that they went on by themselves. I find that fascinating. I don't really have the interest in all subjects that people are interested in, obviously. So even though I'm excited about having that experience with someone, I don't really like, not really, it's not that I don't like, it's just that I'm not, like, I still tune certain things out, you know, or eventually I'll just get bored and I just stop listening. And, you know, usually I'll try to fucking let it be known. But most times what I really end up doing is just like acknowledge that I wasn't listening there for a little bit, and then put a mental effort to start paying attention again right now. But I find that there's a lot of scenarios where that happens, and then the person asks me a question about what they were just talking about, or, you know, like there's the social cue for me to respond to what they're saying, and I look at them and go, listen, that's when I just come clean. I'm like, listen, I'm not gonna lie. I was half listening, or I didn't quite hear all that, or my mind wandered off. Sorry. But yeah, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I'm burning out here just fucking seeing you talking about this. So I guess I'll just end that here. But yeah, loneliness is it's very common, you know, which is weird because like. Okay, hold on, I won't end this here yet, because, like, a huge thing happened that, it's just weird, because I'm just, like, it's a historical event that I'm just alive for, you know, I'm here, living it, but life is the same, but something big happened that's going to be taught to future generations, if there are future generations, and that is, aliens do exist. While, yeah, there were testimonies under oath from military personnel, high-ranking and whatnot, talking to Congress about, you know, shit that they've experienced or want to talk about, that they know of, about aliens and UFOs and whatnot, that's all been said under oath by credible people. And what's fucked is that a lot of the shit that they talk about lines up with a lot of shit that Stephen Greer talks about. And if you've listened to any of his stuff, it's not painting a good picture on humanity. It's actually a very realist, not realist, very easy to believe, unsurprising yet shocking and vile picture of humanity, and that is that humans are fucked up and we will do really fucked up things to each other just for the sake of power, preserving power, the protection of self and loved ones. And that may sound like, it's like, well, yeah, I mean, that's just the way it is, you know, you need to be like that in order to live, but I don't know, man. We're intelligent enough that, we're developed enough that it's a duty. You know, it's like Uncle Ben said, man, with great power comes great responsibility, and I think that humans underestimate our power oh so often that we overestimate how much force we need in order to exert our power. Like, the classic scenario I always think of, not always think of, it's just, I don't know, it's a familiar thought, is the idea of someone mugging me. I know that I'm probably not going to live. Like, that's just, like, I just assume that I'm, oh, fuck, man, like, I'm going to die here. This is it, you know? And I don't run, and I don't attack. I just do what they want me to do, all while pleading to them that, hey, I literally do not care that this is happening. I just want to live. You can take what you want, man. And hopefully I get to go home tonight, you know? From the mugger's perspective, whether it's me picturing myself as being the mugger or just any other person, you know, I pulled a gun on someone, man, and I'm telling them to give me their money. I'm threatening their life, and not only that, by putting myself in the situation, I'm threatening my own well-being in life. I'm threatening whatever I have for more. You know, because if I have a gun, well, for starters, I have a gun. Those are worth quite a bit. I have bullets. Those are worth something. I have clothes. I probably have somewhere to sleep that I usually go to, so, you know, somewhere safe. All that shit. I'm putting it on the line in this one moment just for some more. And I would feel justified in shooting someone to protect what I have if it means that I get to keep it. Plus, I get more, you know? So as a mugger, I have some conviction, because there's no convincing a mugger to stop what they're doing, because they've made the choice before they mugged you. They made the choice before they mugged you. And when they mug you, that is the product of that choice. Just like how, you know, when people are ruminating by themselves and whatnot, those ideas, opinions and whatnot, get blended into their perceptions of reality, that blending of opinion into their perception of reality is the product of those ruminations, of those streams of consciousness, you know? So it's the same thing, except in this scenario the stakes are high, and on both sides it's a double bind, you know? One person just wants to go back with what they have, and the other one wants that, but more. And other than that, it's the same. See, they're the same person. I don't know, and that just brings me back to thinking about how I'm like everyone, I'm you, you're me. You know? We're the same thing doing the same thing. And yeah, we have minor differences, but I mean, if I look at a cat and you put another cat beside it that's a different color and a different breed, I'll be able to tell you that's a different color and a different breed, but I'm not going to be able to break down You know, like the details, the differences that only they would know because they're them from each other. I wouldn't be able to break that down for you unless I'm an expert in that, you know, which I'm not. So I can't do that. And yeah, it's the same thing, you know, it's the same thing with us. And when I think about aliens, it goes back to that as well. When if an alien were to look down on me, right, from wherever they are, they're listening to me, they're going to say, oh, Jesus, this is like the 20th or 200th or millionth or billionth person that's said these things or thought these things. Let's assume they can telepathically read my mind or some shit. Then, like, I would, if I was that alien, I'd assume, like, oh, well, they're all so similar. Like, they're all so similar. It's crazy. But they're so obsessed with how different they are from each other. They almost yearn for it. They're envious of being unique. It's sad. It's so sad. It's like, why? It doesn't matter, man. Who cares if you're unique? It's not going to improve anything. So why do I want to be different, you know? It's ego. Yeah, no, I just hope I get to fucking have a conversation with an alien, man. When I say alien, what I really mean is just a non-human intelligent species that I can communicate with. You know, I want to communicate with a non-human species. They don't even have to be smarter or as smart as me. I just want to, like, let me talk to my cat, my dog, you know. Let me talk with a fucking monkey, with an ape, with a chimp. Let me talk with them, dude. Let me share what I know with them. Let me see if there's any way that we can just share. Because, like, what the fuck is going on, you know? Like, what the fuck is going on right now? I didn't exist, and now I exist. And, like, in this moment, having this thought right now, I'm 24, and apparently in a certain amount of years, we have a measurement system in place to give us an estimate of how long we're going to probably live if nothing bad happens to us. Is like, okay, and then what? I just don't exist, but it's going to be really painful on the way out. Why? Why is it really painful? Why does it have to be like that, you know? What the fuck's going on? Like, why? Why everything? Why? Period. Everything, period. And I don't even think, I don't, like, if I do get to talk to a non-human intelligent species or communicate with them, I'm 100%, all 99% confident that they don't have that answer. They don't have the answer to why everything. And if they do, I don't know if I want to know it. Because it would just scare me so much. Imagine if the why for everything was, well, reactions and actions. You know, two things collided and boom. All this ripple effect happened. And you're just part of that effect. And that, like, that's it. That's all we know, too. We don't know it. We don't know why to that. We just know that that's where we've ended up. That's just all we know. It's like, cool, you guys are pretty much at the same point we're at. We're just, okay, you know? And the idea of something that's really depressing for me that haunts me and just fucking breaks me, just ruins me, is, if that's true, what I said earlier about how we're just like a ripple effect and, you know, that's it. Like, that's just, like, we're just molecules and we just so happen to be like having, we just happen to have a consciousness, whatever that is, then, like, dude, my parents are gonna die, you know, I've already lost loved ones, they die, they're gone. As far as I'm aware, they're not fucking... They're just... They cease. They're in the void. And the void isn't even real. It's just they're no more. You know? And the depth of emotional connection and just like the fucking profound human experience of, you know, loving other people and just sharing your life with them, your experience of life with them. And then that just, it's no more. It just stops right there. And the one person that lives just has to, you just have to sigh and take a breath and then fucking keep going, man. You know? Try to not let that phase you. I don't know, man. It's just... it just sucks. It's horrible for... If that's the way it is. It would be a dream if consciousness is something that transcends death. And I get to actually continue some level of my experience in reality in some way, and getting to interact with the other streams of consciousness that I've been so grateful to have in my life, to just be part of my experience of life, or my experience of existence itself. It would just be great, you know? Yeah, I don't know, man. To me, if it looks like a rat, sounds like a rat, moves like a rat, it's a rat. And if life looks, feels, and seems to end at death, then probably ends at death. And that sucks. And that statement doesn't even touch how much that sucks. But gets the point across. Well, sorry to leave it on a fucking depressing note, but that's just where I ended up. Yeah. Enjoy the rest of your day or night or whatever. And drink some water. Go for a walk. Sit in the sun. Read something maybe, or don't. Just get bored. Be bored. Don't go on your phone. That'd be nice. All right.
Hey, yo, it's your boy Jay-Z coming at you live from E-Town.
No, anyway. Okay. Real shit, though. Okay?
I think that it's fucking wild
that
in today's culture, in Canada and America, the concept of a person who is an adult who just wants to have a platonic relationship with children, teenagers, youth, you know, like whatever age group, and they just and like just want to either be role models or simply just be friendly, you know, like just like talk to the kid as if they're a person, not, you know, like a so-and-so's kid. You know, there's like two different mindsets that go on there when you go to approach someone. Like, so anyway, I find it fucked up that there's a very big stigma on adults when it comes to any type of interaction with children. And you see it, you see that stigma existing within people's perspectives when they're out socializing in public. You know, like a lot of people won't even look at a kid if they're at, like, if I were to go to, like, a fast food joint and try and get, like, a donair or something, right? And there's a mom and her son that comes in, and the son's, like, 10 years old, maybe 8 years old. And everyone else that's in there who doesn't have children rarely even ever bother looking down at the kid. Now, I'm not saying, like, let me not immediately just go against myself there. But, like, what I'm saying is, as a child, I remember a thing that really bugged me was how I was always ignored. Like, I was always ignored, you know? I was something that was rather just, like, hey, come on, you know, when I was out in public, they're like, hey, come on, like, let's go this way, let's go that way, or whatever. And I would just, like, be listening, like, okay. Like, yeah, we're doing this now, okay. But then I'm like, you know, I'm a kid. All this is new to me, you know? So I'm looking around at all the new faces, all these people. I'm making sense of all of it. I'm like, what the hell? Why does no one look like... And, like, one or two people would look at me, and when they would, they would, like, smile or something. Or just, like, some people would just, like, you know, they'd just, like, glance at you, and you'd make eye contact for them for that moment, and they're just, like, you're just, like, looking up at them, and they're just, like, fucking looking down on you. And it's just like, hey, man, I'm here. Hello. And the guys who smile or the people who smiled, you'd just be, like, so fucking happy about it. Like, I was anyway. Anyway, though. So, yeah, like, nowadays, there's barely that happening. And I always do my best to, like, acknowledge any kid, like, that just happens to cross paths with me. Like, I look at them, I just, like, you know, you look them in the eyes and you give them a genuine smile. Because that gives them an impression on type of world that they're in, you know? A world where strangers look at kids and just give them a genuine smile, and they don't see the kids as, you know, this almost like alter ego word, like child, and then you think of all these fucking crazy, like, sub words, you know, these nouns start popping up in your head, and a lot of them are fucking negative, you know, because of just, like, how, like, hey, should I even talk to this guy? Should I even talk to this kid? What if I get, like, what if the parents get upset at me for just talking to their kid, you know? Like, I hope people don't think I'm fucking weird. Oh, God, like, shit, people will probably think I'm weird, you know, like, shit like that. And it's like, okay, listen, what happened to innocent until proven guilty, right? What happened to just, hey, you're innocent and you don't need to be proven of anything. You're just innocent. Alright? It's okay. Like, you haven't fucking done anything wrong, dude. You know? But the, like I said, in a free world, the concepts of right and wrong become so fucking blurred. For whatever fucking reason, you just see so much confusion everywhere. You know? And a lot of it's anxiety and changing times. You know, it's tumultuous. People don't know what words to use. Some people are just scared of fucking existing, you know? Some people just are just tired of it all, so they have no fucking fuse for that. And the people who are scared of existing know that, so that makes them even more scared. And then there's people who are just, like, thriving and having a great time and genuinely, like, just, like, letting their positivity influence the world in a manner that just, like, makes it that much more better, you know? And the scared people see that and they feel a little less scared, you know? Like, there's all this crazy dynamic I'm seeing going on, and it's just crazy, dude. It's just crazy, because, like I said, when I was in Egypt, like, for me, when I look back, okay, let me get away from that. When I look back on, you know, the most influential people to me, you know, like, who are my heroes and who are the people that I look up to? It's a question that's extremely important to know at a young age as you're developing, asking, hey, what are the people that I look up to right now? You know, like, who are my role models right now? Let me see, because here's the thing. I don't know if this is common knowledge, but a person, any person, is a reflection. Just like art is a reflection of reality, people are a reflection of reality. And so, when you have someone who is surrounded by poor role models and just, you know, bad life choices are just being made in front of them, and they're growing up in that, and they're seeing it all. It's like, you're putting that kid in an opportunity to either grow or to either learn some terrible shit. And a lot of kids don't have the gut instinct to recognize bad from good. They're still learning that, but there is a gut instinct. And that gut instinct is that ancient fear that has literally been studied to have been around since we were cavemen. That's probably the one reason why we are here today. That fucking feeling you get in your gut when you know something is fucked up, it hits you pretty hard, you know? And listening to that is usually a good idea. But, like I said, if you had grown up in an environment where bad choices are being made all around you, and there's people who are charismatic, not everyone is antisocial. There are people who are charismatic, and it's usually the charismatic ones who you see making some fucked up thing. You know, they're doing something fucked up, and your gut instinct goes off. You know, you see a charismatic person skateboarding, and then when they're done skateboarding, you know, they disappear for a while. You don't know where they went, and then they come back, and they're rubbing this white powder off their nose, and you're like, whoa, he's acting different, you know? I may not know what as a child, I don't know what the concept of a drug is or what that does to a person, but when I can see when someone's changed, it's not hard for me to pick up on it, you know? It's fucking obvious. Because there's literally a as an adult, you know, it's because there's literally a change in that person's, you know, chemical balance in their brain. Their neurons and their neurotransmitters and synapses are firing off in different ways. They're like all kinds of crazy shit's going on up there, dude. You know, they're releasing fucking endorphins, or they're releasing fucking serotonin, dopamine, fucking, you know, they got what's it called? Fucking is it epinephrine? Fucking no, not epinephrine. Fucking adrenaline. Yeah, epinephrine. Fucking, you know, all kind acetylcholine. Fucking all that shit, dude. It's all going off, dude. All right. So that's gonna that's gonna make them act different. And a kid sees that just off gut instinct. You know, there's some level of ancestral knowledge that just exists within our gut. I swear to God. And so there's that going on, right? I'm way off track again. Let's go back. My point, I'm trying to keep this short so that I don't go off on too many tangents, as fun and as interesting as the subjects may be. But the main point being is that I'm thinking it would be pretty damn sick if people could just get over the stigma surrounding adults and children. You know, I understand that there are some fucked up people out there that want to do some fucked up things to kids. But that doesn't mean that you go around treating everyone like that. Remember that gut instinct I was just fucking rambling about? Use that. But don't just trust it willy-nilly like you would someone else, you know? What I'm saying is, if you're going to trust your gut, make sure that you actually vetted that feeling before trusting it. Because sometimes our feelings might be out of tune with what's happening in reality. I know that sounds crazy, but think of life, existence, as a guitar solo on Guitar Hero. If you don't know what Guitar Hero is, it's a game where you get this toy guitar, and it's got all these different colored buttons on the shaft of the guitar. And there's green, red, yellow, orange, blue, all that stuff. And the game is literally just playing popular hits and showing you a highway that shows you where what buttons to press at what time. And that's supposed to be in tune and in rhythm with the song. And they do the sound design so that if you mess up, the song goes out of tune and gets all gross. until you go back in tune by just pressing the next button that's coming down that highway. So, you know, it's one of those beat games. And I just know some people don't know about that, so I'm going to mention it just to get it out of the way. So, life is like that, in the sense that if you don't line up each and every button press with the song, that is life, just exists, it's just happening, it's just, no matter what you do, life just keeps going, right? Just like that song, it just keeps going. And you either get in tune or you don't. But if you get in tune, you feel it, and you're like, okay, life's not that bad right now. It might be pretty bad, but whatever, you know, we out here, we're cooking, all right, we're making moves, and if we're not, it's okay, because we're gonna make moves, you know? And then it gets out of tune, you know, you go, oh, you made a wrong decision there. Button press, misstep, misinput. Song's out of tune, you really don't like that, that's that gut feeling going off. Oh, miss another one, oh, that's even worse now. Oh, miss another one, oh, that's even worse now, you know? It's like it helps you recalibrate with what you think you should be doing in life. It's probably like the fact that it's one of the oldest mechanisms in our body. And it's just fear, you know, like the feeling it gives you is just fear at its core. It's different flavors of fear, but nonetheless fear. And it's the oldest. So if it's the oldest and you were just born with it, then like it develops with you, and how you develop affects how it will essentially converse with you, you know? Because if you're someone who has insane amounts of anxiety, like I'm a pretty anxious fucking dude. I don't know if you should be able to tell by now, I think, but just how I talk and the fact that you could probably hear I'm pacing and whatnot. And just like the way I'm building my sentences, you know? Like some of the things that I almost say that I don't say, the Freudian slips, as some would say. Yeah. Anyway. Like as an anxious dude, I'm pretty much having a conversation with my fucking gut instinct pretty often. It's pretty fucking often, you know? I'm constantly sitting there like dealing. Just contemplating, dude. And if I don't do that, then I've noticed I make decisions that are just not in my best interest or the best interest of the people that I care about, you know? And even though I do I contemplate on it, on the feelings that arise from, you know, like that gut instinct, I still do make decisions that I view as mistakes. Either way, I'll make mistakes. It's not like I'm trying to give you a cheat sheet on how to not make mistakes. Like, no, it happens either way. But it's because I'm asking questions with myself, answering them, and then testing them out and seeing that, oh shit, I was wrong. Okay, back to square zero. You know? But yeah, like, and I think that's just like a healthy habit to be in for myself. That's something that keeps me afloat. And as long as I carry through with the questions and answering them to myself, like, hey, I'm sitting here, you know, here's the question, hey, gut instinct, here's the question. I haven't worked on my creative work and on my creative endeavors in a while now. And it's been like this for a long time, you know? It's been how many years of me just, all right, I write a little bit and then I don't write for a long time, you know? Because writing stories. It's like, yeah, I write a little bit and then I don't write anything for a long time, and then I go back, write a little bit more, and then I don't write anything for a long time. And when I say a long time, I'm talking about the stretch of 5 years now. Yeah. You know, like, hey man, what's going on? You know? Like, what's going on there? That's the question. Gut instinct. And the gut instinct responds if you just sit there and you listen to yourself. Like, the thing that I've learned that really helps with emotional intelligence for myself is getting those emotion wheels, I think they're called. It's like Google an emotion vocabulary wheel or some shit. It's something like that. And you'll see that it shows you, like, the good ones are the ones where there's, like, the center is just empty, it's just hollow, but all around, like an inverted circle, you'll see an inverted circle created out of these one-word emotions that are very general, like fear, like sadness, like happiness, like anger, you know, shit like that. And then within those, one step out, so this is going to look like a flower in a sense, like within there's a sadness category, that's the big category, and then a subcategory that exists like a branch, just like straight ahead, leading outwards, like I said, like a flower, it all blooms outwards. The next word would be like, what's a more specific type of emotion that's within sadness, like a fucking, like anxiety. Anxiety is honestly a good one. Doubt, you know. I don't know, I can't think of them. And that's the cool part. And that's the cool part here is that I don't even remember all the fucking different categories, but there's a lot of nouns that are used to describe different emotions and more specific words for those, for that category of emotion. So it helps a lot with understanding yourself and actually giving your gut instinct a voice to respond to you, you know? I know that there are people who don't have an internal dialogue with themselves. They just don't, like, their brain just doesn't work like that. That's cool. I don't know how to help you there because I have no experience with that. But I hope you find someone that, you know, can communicate with you on what I'm talking about with your gut instinct in a way that makes sense. Maybe it's visual. Maybe it's all visual stuff instead of hearing it, because I get the whole visual, like, thinking. You give that internal dialogue to yourself with your gut instinct, and then you're able to answer a question like, well, it's because you've been, like, and, like, here's the cool thing with the gut instinct is that it develops with you, right? And so when you've learned something on a subject that you're actually interested in, you know, you don't have to be passionate about it, you're just interested in it, you know, your brain likes it, and so you learn about it, you end up remembering just bits of information from that. And the more you're interested in it, the bigger the bits, but you remember bits of information of it. For me, I'm interested in psychology and philosophy. I find that shit fascinating, and I had studied it for 3 years. I still have another year to go, and I plan on finishing it. And that's another thing that I ask questions about to myself with my gut instinct. But I decide, okay, listen, Mo, your gut instinct's telling you that, yeah, you haven't been working at your creative endeavors because you're taking in a lot of dopamine. My gut instinct tells me that because it's me, so I know that, you know? Taking in a lot of dopamine, and when you take in a lot like anything in abundance isn't good for you. When you have too much dopamine, well, your brain starts to try and regulate that because it's noticing that this is the normal. So that becomes baseline. Now that dopamine no longer releases at that amount of stimulation, and congratulations, you have now just grown a tolerance to dopamine or serotonin or both usually and more. But like, dopamine and serotonin are the two main drugs that exist within our brains that literally, I say drug, funny, but I mean like chemicals, you know, like neurotransmitters, neuroreceptors, they're essentially like the juice that the electricity flows through in our brain, and that juice is flavored. And depending on the flavor of the juice, you feel a certain type of way, see the world a different type of way. It literally affects how you think and process the world. The more aware you become of it, the higher the likelihood that you're able to control those levels as you please. I'm not saying that's for everyone. That's something that's possible for everyone. I'm just finding that, like, it is possible. It just takes work. In the form of changing your habits. You know, like, essentially, it's not self-help, it's just fucking living, you know? It's just, hey, here's your brain, you know how it's working, you know what to do so that it works in a way that you want. So all you have to do is do it. All you have to do is do it, and not just do it once, not just do it twice, not just do it three times, but do that with the intention of doing it forever. Permanence. If you're gonna go all the way. I don't know who the fuck said that, but it's some badass. You know? And it's okay if you give up or if you quit during that process, because it is a process that's difficult. But as long as you just get up and do it again and try again, then you're good. You're living. That's essentially all of life. Congratulations. This is what adults do every day forever. No fucking joke, dude. If you understand that process, what I just said, and you're not an adult right now, I just gave you Excalibur, okay? You just became Guts from Berserk. I just gave you a 340-pound slab of iron that's a sword. Now train with it if you want to. Or just, you know, think about it, look at it, oh, that's pretty cool, and then walk away. It's up to you. What I'm saying is, it's all that life is for any adult and every adult, is just making mistakes, correcting them, making more mistakes, correcting them. You know, that's it. And if you want to get better at life, in whatever way that is, then it's important to remember to always keep going. To just not give up. Because it's only defeat until you've admitted it. When it comes to yourself, anyway. When it comes to reality, it's a bit of a different story. Because sometimes, actually, pretty much all the time, when you experience defeat in reality, and not within, like, mentally or psychologically, I had to get a drink of water. My fucking throat. I've just been talking for a fucking half hour straight here. When it's in reality and you experience defeat, well, it doesn't matter how you feel about it, it's happening. That's that constant song of life. That's the constant music of life. So yeah. Back to the fucking original thing that I came up with here, and I was gonna say that I'm trying to keep it short so I don't go on too many tangents, but let's be real. I think I'm feeling pretty fucking manic right now. And, I'm enjoying it. But, you know, we're gonna simmer here. We're gonna end it. Gotta eat and shit. Gotta get back to it. But, yeah, so anyway, original point was, I think that's kind of fucked up. A lot of people in the West have this negative stigma around adults just fucking treating kids as people. And that's it. So, yeah, peace. Enjoy the rest of your day or night, you know. Fucking.
Alright, think about it this way, alright, dude? Y'all just came in at a time when I was thinking about how people view art, you know? At least how I think people view art. So yeah, take that with a grain of salt. I'm giving you a little insight into my bubble of reality here. See, like, here, okay. I think people view art in a very product way, in a very thing way, in a very material way, you know? When someone says, oh, well, what's your favorite movie, or what's the best Marvel movie, or why this Marvel movie is better than this Marvel movie. I'm using Marvel because that's got the biggest demographic. So, like, when people talk about art in that sense, then you're fucking... You're limiting yourself. You know, people get really comfortable thinking about it in that sense. And what I'm getting at here is, let's say, for example, and I've already said this before, if you were to see art as words, view arts the same way you view words. You know, like when you're in language arts class in high school, they teach you what a noun is, what an adjective is, what a verb is, and how to use those in conjunction. But let's compare Dave and Atlanta to nouns, you know? Like, you don't look at two different nouns and go, oh, well, this one's better than that one. I mean, maybe in situations, yeah, in some specific contexts, yeah. Same way how if you talk about Dave and Atlanta and their comparisons and saying, oh, well, one's better than the other, well, it's like, what's the scenario here? If you're talking about how they achieve a sense of weirdness and like super reality where shit just feels off, then yeah, Atlanta beats Dave in that scenario, right? So it's like you have to identify the function that you're trying to use it in. But when you just look at them side by side, no fucking situational or contextual modifiers, then yeah, you cannot compare either one because they're both meant for different things. They're both completely different things. While surely being within, you know, the same genre or the same, you know, like defined as the same thing, they're both shows, they're still functioning as completely separate things. And people seem to fucking look at, you know, movies and shows and not like they view words. And I think if people viewed shows the way they viewed words, then we'd have better conversations, more constructive conversations about how to improve said movies and shows, you know? Like, the Halo show and the Witcher show are something else I wanted to talk about because they're both things that just grasped, you know, just reached for... They were so close to achieving like they almost pioneered a new era of adaptations for stories because of the confidence that they would have bestowed on people by setting themselves as examples by just their mere existence. Like, the Halo show gets a lot right, but it also gets some very big things wrong. There aren't many of those big things, but they're big, so the impact is robust. And The Witcher show is the exact same problem. Every adaptation has had this problem. As a fan, when you're a fan of the thing that's being adapted, this will always be a problem. But that doesn't mean it's impossible for there to be a good adaptation. Whenever you hear someone say it's impossible to adapt this or that, it's because they know they're more jaded rather or pessimistic rather than actually believing that it's impossible. It's just when you look at the history of adaptations, there's so much things that contributed to the original piece of art, the original piece, getting so beloved, and those things almost always are missing from the adaptation. There are certain elements to a recipe that you must preserve, otherwise, it's no longer that recipe anymore, and you're making something else entirely, and that's not what fucking anyone wanted, you know? Like, you look at The Witcher, you got the casting down, besides a couple of the supporting characters, you get the casting down, and then you throw away the writing in a sense, just in terms of like, why are you playing with the timeline so much in the first season? Everybody was confused. Alright, there's the first part. Second season, hey man, what's going on here? I just don't like, what are we doing here? The first season, at least we got to enjoy some pretty sick monsters. The second one, we got to enjoy a little bit of monsters, but then there was some weird shit going on the side. But it just is like, eh, okay. And then by the time it's the third one, meh. Meh. The action, though, amazing. The acting, amazing. You know? The mood, the coloring, the fucking... the set, the costumes, the VFX, amazing. The choreography, amazing. Like... the big, like when I say, like, for The Witcher, I don't know as much about, so I can't really speak to it, but all I know is that it felt meh at the end, and it shouldn't have felt meh. And for me personally, that just comes down to pacing between exposition and action. That's it. You know, I always found that was fucked up in that show, so I just kind of, like, dragged my feet through it. But don't get me wrong, when there was action, it was great. And that's, like, a big part of The Witcher. Like, fuck, if you can make a game off of it, it kind of puts a big prominence on how important getting the action down is. And they did. But, again, the pacing was too blah. It was too meh. It was too bleh. Halo, on the other hand. The big one. The really big one. Why does Master Chief talk so much? Why did he take his helmet off so much? Now, I'm not saying because he talks too much, he shouldn't talk at all. I'm saying he talks too much. Tone it back a bit. Okay? The man is a fucking Spartan. Spartans are stoic. They don't need to talk too much. They get around, they do fine with some grunts and some head shakes and nods and some facial expressions. And if they're wearing a helmet, head movement, body language, it's done. It's all you need. Deadpool's a great example of that. Deadpool's got less facial expressions going on than fucking Master Chief. And yet, we still connect with that character. He talks way too much, but that's part of the character. Halo, on the other hand, Master Chief, you got a guy who has seen some otherworldly horrors, fought through them, survived, and then saved other people's lives, as well as solving the issue. Multiple times, alright? This guy's gonna be pretty fucking quiet. He's not gonna be a yapper, alright? And when you come into the story in the Halo show, it's like, yeah, he's been around for a little bit, but he's still younger. He's a little younger. But, like, he's in the thick of it, you know? Like, he's prime age, you'd say. So he's already been through enough shit to be pretty fucking quiet. He's still a person at the end of the day. And you can... and here's the other, like, looming issue that is connected to Master Chief taking off his helmet all the time and fucking yapping too much. Let me sit down the fucking producers, writers, directors, everyone fucking creatively involved at the Halo show and just say, hey, you can convey emotion, you can convey humanity, without having the person be so damn expressive. It's possible. In fact, it is more impactful if they express less.
It's pretty simple, you know? Fucking, what's his name said it recently? Bryan Cranston. He was on Hot Ones, and he mentioned, you know, when it comes to, like, audience reactions and whatnot, if you got a character who cries a lot, then the audience isn't going to cry for him, because the character's doing it for him. But if you get a character who tries not to cry a lot, then the audience will cry for him, you know? And that line of logic needs to be applied with the Halo show. Because you got a character who has always been the embodiment of humanity. You know, for the gamers, for the fans of the fucking, of the Halo games, when you picked up the controller and you started playing the fucking campaign of any of the Halos, you were stepping into the suit and you were the Master Chief. And that's like partly game design, but also partly just the nature of the story, of the Halo story, of the Master Chief story specifically. And so for them to have him constantly taking off his helmet, it's like he's no longer iconic. He's just John, some dude. Sure, when he has the helmet on, it's iconic, but it feels stolen. It feels taken and not earned, you know? Because in the games, he's a pre-existing fucking icon. Whether or not you made the show, he was already iconic. So that was like a given, and they took advantage of that, it feels. It feels like they took advantage of the fact that people know who Master Chief is. Nobody knows who John is. And so we're gonna have John and we're gonna have Master Chief as literally two separate characters played by the same guy. Why? What are you doing? What are you doing? Why do you want to do something new? Actually though. Because you've got these amazing stories, and all of us played them, and we all thought, damn, this shit was so sick. Imagine if they made this a movie. This, what we just fucking played, but a movie. Like, that's the biggest thing with all games. Games do, like story-based games have always tried to, like, be immersive, and they do it in different ways. Some try to go to overhaul the animations and camera work, like God of War, Last of Us, and countless others, and it works phenomenally, but it's also very limiting still. It's still just a game, right? But, wow, there's a lot that they can do that feels very cinematic at times. But then what I'm trying to say is, like, okay, games do that. And players play it, and then they just kind of, like, it feels them wanting more of that cinematic experience. And regardless of whether or not I'm playing it, I could be watching it, and I would still enjoy it just as much, if not more, because of the extra limitlessness of the cinematic medium. You know? When you've got real people doing it, or it doesn't even have to be real people, if you were just to do a fucking VFX even, but imitate it as real people and shit, then yeah, it would still be fucking cool. Like, Warhammer is such an intense niche cinematically because of the fucking VFX work that people do for the trailers, the short videos. Like, it's amazing stuff, truly. Like, Astartes, dude? Oh! Ooh! You know? So, like, it's possible. It's just, oh man, it's frustrating. Like, even from a business perspective, you're trying to make money in the film industry by appeasing, but somehow you're appeasing nobody. You know? What I'm figuring here then is that you've got a good goal, all right? You want to appease people. Yeah, low-key, every single fucking artist that works in film is going to be trying to appease their audience in some way. Whether they want to admit it or not, it's a reality. And the ones who don't mean, like, the ones who don't mean to appease them truly make whatever they want, and those are cool. It's great. But nobody might watch it. Somebody might watch it. A lot of people might watch it, you know? And so, like, there's nothing wrong with trying to appease people. It's just how you go about it. That's what I want to fucking talk about as well. Because that's a very fucking big issue right now. And it has been for the last, like, 10 years. So the how. You got a good goal, but the how is fucked up. I'm imagining that the way that the film industry is generally trying to appease their audiences is by trying to approach the biggest demographics, the demographics that are most likely to pay to go to the theater, so teenagers, young teens, young adults, etc., and try to gear movies towards what they like, what they think they like, what those demographics like, not the individuals, but the demographics, the populations. And that's where shit gets fucked up and gets skewed. Because you got smaller groups of a population, subgroups, that are very loud, but they're the minority. Then you've got large groups that are pretty quiet and chill that don't get appeased. But they still try to say their piece, and so that still gets taken into account. So what you get is a conflict of who to appease who, what to put in the movie, you know, should I have this character as black, white, or Asian? Should I make them this? Like, how racy should I make this movie? Should I make it more safe or not? Well, it's more safe means more money because more people, so let's do that. And as long as you're erring on the side of safety, you can try and get as crazy as you want with what's happening in the story, but it's always going to be like, oh, well, yeah, we've got, you know, Wanda's really evil now, so she's killing all these people, but, you know, there's not, and no blood, no gore. Yeah, she cut some people in half and whatnot, but we didn't see it on screen, you know, like, yeah, let's get all these vibrant colors, and we're gonna make it look all nice and pretty, and yeah, we'll get as much diversity as we can, you know, as much as we can, like, I'm not against having proper representation in the industry, I'm just saying, you don't need to crowbar it into every single fucking aspect, dude. Like, use it when it's appropriate type thing. You don't need to fucking crowbar it in. So anyway, the how is fucked up. My opinion on how you would fix the how is simple. It's just a little retune, alright? You want to appease people. That's the end goal. In order to appease people, you need to write a story that's true to yourself. You need to, as a director, you need to read the story and feel a genuine connection to what's happening in it. And as an actor, you need to genuinely connect with the characters in the story. So the common thread there is reality. You know? So then the suspension of disbelief becomes extremely important. And so on every level, from the writer to the actors, there needs to be a focus, a prioritization on suspension of disbelief. For the actors, it's simply just going back to the first one and truly fucking, like, really getting in there. Getting deep. Put the skin on, dude, you know? Become a skinwalker. Hold on, let me gather my thoughts here because I've been yapping back to back to back here. So, like, how to appease people when it comes to adaptations in the film industry. Simply don't change the biggest things. Step one, be a fan of what you're adapting. That's step one. I'm sick of fucking seeing people who are not fans of what they're creating, of what they're adapting, and it turns out like dog shit. So if you're gonna adapt it, you better be a fan of it. That's just that literally should be, like, on paper, in the contract. And, like, the fucking metric for it is simple. It's just, how much do you know? How much do you know about it? Dave Filoni's a fan of what he makes, and he's been cooking. He's literally been cooking, dude. So, yeah, be a fan of it. You could be the creator of it, and that'd be even better, but, you know, like, in some way, you need to have some type of stake in the original piece. Like, there's a Dead Space movie that's being made, and John Carpenter didn't even get approached for it, which is insane, because any fucking fan of Dead Space would know that Glenn Schofield, one of the creators of Dead Space, was inspired by Event Horizon, The Thing, and plenty of other works, but those two in particular. Aliens, you know. And so, like, if you're gonna make the movie, which is big, because then you're going back to the original inspiration that gave birth to the idea of Dead Space, so you're going back to that medium, you need to make sure that you get it right. Well, no one better than the guy who fucking directed one of the things that inspired the fucking game. You know? Like, that's a no-brainer. That's free money on the table right there, dude. What are you doing? But anyway, he's not attached to it. And he said that he wanted to be attached to it, but it never happened, at least as far as I'm aware. Glenn Schofield and... Fuck, I'm sorry. I don't know the other guy's fucking name. But Glenn Schofield never got approached to do the Dead Space movie as well. The Gears of War movie or show or whatever never approached the original creator. And there's, like, that makes no sense to me. Because I bet if they fucking died, if they were already dead, and then they decided to make adaptations of their work, ooh, the stakes are pretty high now, aren't they? You know, your image is on the line. If you fuck this up, people are gonna come at you with pitchforks and torches in defense of the fucking creator who can't defend themselves, you know? And it seems whenever you see an adaptation on someone's work who's deceased already, it's pretty damn good. You get it right. You know? So, it really just comes down to giving a shit about what you're fucking making at the end of the day, honestly. Like, that's really what it is. If you look at everything I've said in the last 22 minutes, if you just gave a shit about what you're doing, what you are actually making, then you're gonna make money. Because it seems a lot of these decisions that are being made in the industry are not being made with the film in mind, the fucking story in mind. There's plot as well as story, and then there's the movie, and then there's a story. These are separate things, right? They all exist within each other, overlapping, but you can have a fucking movie, and it could still be a shit movie, but well made. And you could have amazing plot and shit story, and the movie's dog shit. You could have fucking shit story, fantastic plot, still a shit movie, you know? But if you had fantastic story, fantastic plot is attached, and then you get a good movie. Like, at the end of the day, why the fuck do we watch a movie? To get a good story. And how is it good? Well, how it's told, what it is, what is the story? Why is it being told? What's the point of it? You know? So, yeah, I don't know. Like, I said a whole lot there just to get back to... Just to make the simple fucking elegant one-line point of if you give a shit about what you're making... What I mean is, if you give a shit about the story that you're making, it's going to be good. Period. If you truly fucking prioritize it, and you really obsess and care about it, like someone who had, like,
for example, like, anyone who wants to create a story and fucking share it with the world on a scale like in the film industry would be going nuts, dude. They would be going nuts if they got the opportunity. And then the lengths that they would go to ensure that what they are creating after they got the opportunity would be immense, robust, but precise, dude. And that's what you want. It's the obsessive ones that genuinely make the better fucking art. People like Donald Glover and fucking... and Little Dicky and fucking Stanley Kubrick, Quentin Tarantino, Christopher Nolan, fucking Martin Scorsese, Ari Aster, Edgar Wright, fucking Robert Eggers, I think his name is. My bad if I got his name wrong. Like, if you just go search up an interview or something about them, find something where they're talking about what they made, you're gonna fucking learn real quick that they it's not that they're just passionate about what they're making, it's that they're actually, they're like weaponizing that passion, dude. You know? Fucking militarizing it, dude. They are moving. They're fucking acting on it. Boldly. And that's how you get good shit. Phil Tippett. You spent like what? Fucking 15, 20 years making Mad God? Cooks. Fucking cooks. It's a fantastic example of how you can still use practical or stop motion and VFX even all in unison and still achieve this fucking, I don't even know how to explain it. It's not even that it's realism, it's just that it looks real, it feels more real, it connects because on some level it is real. It's something you can grab, it's something you can hold, it's something that if I were there in person, I would have seen it, you know? And that really translates really fucking in a profound way on film. So, like, I don't know, man. That's it. That's the end.